All right. Last week, we talked about reasons why your editor might hate your manuscript. Today, we're going to talk about ways of dealing with that criticism. So stay tuned.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Christian Indie Writers Podcast, where we inform, encourage, and support Christian indie authors on their journey to publication and beyond. I'm Jamie Hirschberger. I write short fiction under the pen name J.R. Nichols.
I'm Jennifer Carl Tong, and I write historical Christian romance.
I'm Christina Catane, and I write all kinds of stuff.
We just give it up, right, Tina?
Surrender to God's will. I just really want to thank all of you who tune in and listen to the podcast. Those of you who join us live every Friday, you are really the reason that we keep the shenanigans going. We appreciate each and every one of you. We thank you for your support. If you would kindly like, subscribe, share, push every possible button to possibly bring this ministry to others who don't know about us yet, we'd super duper appreciate that as well. Good morning already to Catherine, who's in the chat, and Purpose Behind the Pen, who are giving us a hearty good morning. And good morning to you, Tina, and good morning to you, Jen. We're still short Miss Rhonda. We're still praying for her. Hopefully she'll recover and return soon. But until that time, we're going to get caught up virtually with one another with our What's Up section. So what's up with you this morning, Jen?
First of all, I wanted to let everyone know that we were not laughing at God's will. The reason why we laughed when Jamie said that was because right before we went live, I was complaining about my hair because I had it in a really dumb knot, just, and then I forgot to take it down. And then last minute I was trying to fix it. And I said, I don't remember what I said, but Tina said, when you learn, what did you say, Tina? Because it was hilarious.
When you submit yourself to God's will, yes, for your hair, life gets a lot easier.
So then when Jamie referenced it, it was funny because you guys just don't even get to enjoy the pre-postcast or podcast stuff. It's hilarious. Anyway, so what's going on with me besides the fact that riddled with tech issues this morning, I wasn't sure I was going to make it here, to be honest, but we're here. Be praying for my router. I don't know what's going on with it, but we've had router issues, all of us. Well, it's just been crazy. But my main what's up is that I planned a fundraiser for our youth group that is this weekend. It is a scrapbook 2-day event. Starts today, this afternoon. And a lot of work has gone into it, not just by me, but other people, including like making food and setup and all that. And then the Lord decided that winter was not over in Michigan. So right now we are under a weather advisory that's going to turn into a weather alert. We're supposed to get 3 to 6 inches, which sometimes in Michigan is not a big deal, but the roads are really bad right now. And so I have to figure out what is going to happen. I've never been in charge of an event that I had to make the decision what to do about bad weather. I don't want to cancel it. I don't want to postpone it. We're ready to rock and roll, but I also don't want people to be out on the roads if it's bad just because they feel like they have this obligation to come. Do you know what I mean? So be praying for me.
I follow the Michigan Weather Authority on Facebook, and they are always the most accurate. And they said that the whole thing moved south unexpectedly, and now we're expected to get 6 to 7 inches.
Oh no, stop.
What I saw this morning. I'm sorry. I need to be the bearer. Like, maybe they're wrong. Like, you know, predicting the weather is the only job you can be wrong every time and still keep your job.
I know. And that's the thing, is that I don't even have the ability to predict the weather. I just have to listen to other people. And I have a couple people that are out on the road right now, and they're going to let me know what they think. But right now it's 10 o'clock in the morning. This event starts at 3, goes till midnight tonight. And then tomorrow morning, I'm not worried about tomorrow. It's tonight. And so, yeah, just be praying for me because I want to make the right decision. This money, you know, we would lose money, honestly, because I'd have to either reschedule and give people money back that cannot make it. We'd have this food I don't know what to do with. Like, but at the same time, that doesn't matter. What matters is people being safe, right? So be praying for me. That's my what's up today.
The food component is tricky, but I mean, instead of refunding people and rescheduling, possibly you could offer a virtual alternative where they craft wherever they are and you all kind of body double in a Zoom room. I mean, it's just one option for you to consider if you're going to try to make it work for tonight without people traveling. I'm sorry that that's happening to you. It's terrible.
Thanks. But yeah, just pray. I just want God's will in the whole thing. So
Carol says she's only getting a few inches. She's way north of you.
That's a bummer, Catherine. Yeah.
You can have it. Well, I give it up to you.
Everyone earlier this month, we had a beautiful beginning of the month and everyone's like, I think winter's done. I'm like, it's Michigan. Winter's not done. I kept saying that. And then I started kind of get excited. I'm like, maybe it's done. It feels like it's done. Nope.
It's
of course it isn't. Of course not.
My son-in-law posted on Facebook this morning. That's it. I'm getting the Christmas tree back out.
Well,
we're going to have more snow today than we did at Christmas time, the whole time.
So crazy. Yeah. It was a pretty mild winter before.
Yeah, I think this is going to be our worst storm. All joking aside, I think this is our worst storm of the season.
Purpose behind the pen says that she's released her fifth book as her What's Up. Congratulations.
That's exciting. Good for you.
Yeah, you're super prolific.
Exciting.
All right, Jamie, what's up with you?
Okay, so this is a very weird sort of a story, but you know, we're all creative people. We all have an imagination. So hopefully you all can kind of ride with me a little bit with this tale. So as I was going to
looking forward to this and I have no idea what you're going to say.
When I would go to work in the villages, occasionally, I mean, you know, super sporadically, there would be this heron that would be in the center island of the road, obviously stalking a lizard or something, but you could see that it would be all like intently. And I'd just be like, what are you doing here, seabird? You're supposed to like be where there's oceans or kind of whatever, but the villages has tried to maintain a lot of natural water features. There's like a nature preserve, whatever. And so it wasn't completely ridiculous for this bird to be around. And plus, hello, Florida. Okay, fine. Still, it was almost kind of like I started to believe this was the same bird every time I saw it. And I would see it in like different places in the villages, right? And then like I would randomly be some other place and there would be another one of these birds. And again, I'd be like, oh, it's my friend. Do you know what I mean? But never frequently enough to be like, oh, I'm going to give it a name. It would just be like, well, there's that darn bird again. So when my friend Kim came down during Christmas time, we went to the southernmost point of Florida and we just stuck our camera out the window and took a picture of the big buoy that's there because why stand in line for a selfie? So whatever. But then we went and found this like pier that jutted out into the ocean and had kind of like a place where you could stand. And you know how they put stuff in the concrete, be like a decoration. So it kind of looked like a compass or whatever. It was really kind of cool. Yeah. And we were kind of like, well, maybe this is really the southernmost point because it seems to us it sticks out farther than that other place. Whatever. We were joking around. So she hands me this card from her kids that's like Merry Christmas to our second mom. And it was just like a great scene for it. It almost felt like a proposal. You know what I mean? Yes. And I turn and look and here's that stupid bird. And I'm just kind of like, what are you doing here? And so it almost felt like this was the end. Like he was with me, you know, and brought me to this conclusion point. Okay. That's part one. Now, part B is much shorter, so hang in there. So part B is all of the sudden, I have not seen this bird since then, but I have started seeing this stupid hawk. So whereas before, randomly and occasionally, I would see this heron, now I'm seeing this hawk that has like brownish red markings on its chest. Beautiful animal. And it isn't like strange or weird that you would see a hawk again, but it's just kind of funny because like, again, on my way to work, there he is standing in the ditch. And then yesterday I came out of the thrift store of all places and just right there, right in front of me on like the grass or whatever, there's sitting a hawk. And I'm like, okay, so now what quest is this hawk leading me on? And so I'm just really curious to see how this will unfold. Like, what will be the proposal moment where, you know, this is the last time I will see this hawk? So that's my what's up for you all today.
I know we have hawks here in Michigan, but I don't think it's like extremely common just to see one. Like, because I know when I see one on the side of the road when I'm driving, whatever, I'm like, oh, look, a hawk. Like, it's uncommon enough for me to have that reaction. Are they super common down there that you would just like see them randomly like that?
I would have said no. Okay. So like when I lived on the canal where we saw lots of, you know, rabbits and wildlife, I would see them kind of circling. And then there was one that would come, a peregrine falcon, actually, it would come and sit on our fence. But again, that was like its habitat. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now yes. I'm like in the burbs and I have seen this hawk, like he likes to hang out at my neighbor's house, Mr. Universe, you know? Oh.
And that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. So occasionally I'll see him there. And then, so like, I don't know, but for it to just be chilling outside of the thrift store yesterday was just very like, what are you, who are you? What is your purpose? You know,
that is so strange. Yeah.
And then I turn and I look at the lady. I'm like, did you see the hawk? And she looks up from her phone and she's like, why are you talking to me? But I was just kind of. I was so like gobsmacked by it that I was like, someone's look, there's a hawk here. So anyway, I just thought I would share that as my what's up. Yeah, Catherine says, awesome. Maybe I need a porch heron to hang out with Kirk.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
And a hawk.
Start a menagerie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's up with you this week, Tina?
Well, I'll tell you, just as soon as I look up the migratory patterns of hawks and herons in Florida.
All right, intellection.
I finished listening to my book. You know, I had Word read it to me. So I finished that. And then I'm about 3/4 of the way through taking each scene and writing a short, like 1 or 2, 3 line synopsis so that I can like look at it and see what I have and do like the backward reverse outline thing.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Good job doing the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it helps me kind of have a eagle eye or hawk's eye view of my manuscript so that I can see if something's missing, if there's any holes or if there's no cause and effect in the scenes. So that's the purpose.
I love that. That's amazing because, you know, you're in your manuscript and you're getting it done. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. That's awesome.
Inspires me.
And my husband took the day off. So pray for me.
Again, another reason. Tina's the one saying you need to cancel, Jen. She's like, even my husband isn't working today. I'm like,
oh, man.
Yep. He's just one of these guys that can't not do anything.
Right.
He just gets antsy and he has to do something.
Does he clean when he gets antsy? He can come hang at my house. My husband does not clean when he gets antsy.
I got to be careful what I say because he's probably listening. But like he'll start a project that'll actually make a big mess before it gets better.
Oh yeah, he'll
decide to like
that sounds like
reorganize the pantry or something.
It sounds like most projects, right. Actually,
my husband does clean sometimes when he gets antsy. Now I think about it, I don't know, I think he does more angry cleaning. Do you guys have a husband that does or know anyone that does angry cleaning? When he gets mad at me is when he cleans more. I think
is I he trying to make fight. You feel guilty yeah. that he's doing it?
I don't know, maybe. I don't think he realizes
I would
doing
be making
it.
Him mad all the time. That's what I
my
would be doing.
I know. My house is a wreck right now. I need to come up with a, I'm going to need to pick a fight.
It's probably an effort to like control a situation. You know what I mean? Because like he can't like make you see things his way, but he can like tidy up this area.
Maybe. Maybe.
You know?
I think his project for today is to go out and shovel the sidewalk every inch or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's at work right now. So he drove to work today when it was not great weather. I talked with him on the way down. It was pretty bad this morning. So
do your dogs want to go out in the snow?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Especially the big one who like the bigger they are, the more snow they bring back into the house.
Oh, sure.
And then she wants to be all over you afterwards. Yeah.
And if you have a
Malamute, turn big.
They don't ever want to come in from the snow.
Hmm. Yeah.
They just want to be any of those northern breeds like the Samoyeds and the Huskies and the Malamutes. People are like, if it's cold, if you're cold, they're cold. I'm like, no, they're not. They love it. They're out there having their best life.
Oh, I got to talk to my friend who has the elk hound. I bet her dog is having just the happiest day.
Probably. The little toy poodle has questions about the snow. If she can run around a lot, I think she likes it, but then she's done because she doesn't have a lot of body fat to keep her warm, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, since we've figured out what's up with everybody, it's time to transition into our topic today, which is coping strategies for authors in what context? Well, we're talking about coping when you get negative feedback from your editor. Last week, we talked about why you might get said negative feedback. And this week, we're going to talk about how to cope with it. So we're basically talking here about managing criticism. And I think that the first component is to talk about your emotional sort of visceral reaction, like the right away sting, right?
Ladies? Right. Because that's the first reaction we normally all have, right?
Yeah, it's humanity. So what is your tip for managing that immediate feedback feeling?
I think, first of all, it's okay. I think it's okay to know that you whatever feeling you're having, that's okay. Because especially if it's your first book and it feels like it's a baby, right? And it feels like you put so much into it and you love it. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be emotional about getting back this feedback. What's not okay is to act out. It's not okay to delete the whole manuscript. It's not okay to like get angry with your editor because you gotta have to understand this is an emotional response and emotion should not dictate your actions. So.
Well, I think that's really good advice, Jen. And even in a different, so anytime somebody upsets you, because I remember at least one occasion, Jen, where you were like, so-and-so did such-and-such and it made me so mad. No one who's any connection to the podcast. And you were kind of like, I'm just going to type out this, what I would do and then not send it. Remember?
And then what happened accidentally?
Sorry, I'm coughing.
Yeah, we all remember this. This was very early on in the podcast and it was terrible. I was very upset with someone that I didn't know that well, that I thought had handled something very unprofessionally. And I knew that I just needed to like take a deep breath. So my deep breath was typing out what I actually wanted to say with not intending to send it. So what I tried to do was like select everything so that I could paste it over somewhere else so I could edit it to make it more professional. And then, so, you know, in Word, if you select something and you hit enter, it deletes it. That does not happen in Microsoft, or I'm sorry, in Messenger. In Messenger, it sends it. And that's exactly what happened. So, yeah.
Is that when we started talking about you having an inner Julia Sugarbaker?
Probably. That's probably when it was very sassily written. And then I think I don't remember how I responded. I did respond something else. And then, she actually came back and apologized and fixed the error that I had seen in how she handled things. So it was still wasn't, and it's not even one that I ever have to deal with again. I don't even remember her name at this point.
Right. But
that's what not to do. That's how not to be professional. Yeah.
You were trying to do it the right way. You were trying to just get it all out and then not send that.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. But what we recommend is just take a deep breath, step back, wait, put some time between you and the moment that you first feel that emotion. Maybe sleep on it. Maybe give it a few days. If you're really upset, you might have to give it a couple of weeks. But don't edit right away. Don't respond to your editor right away. And don't delete your don't delete anything.
Anything.
Just put some time between, because those emotions will dissipate. And then you can think of it as a more logical brain.
Right. Because as we talked about last week, sometimes your editor isn't right. Now, I don't want everyone to cling to that part and think that your editor is never right. But there are times that that it's not exactly right for you. But if you are in that place of emotional like that emotional stage, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between what is good advice and what just is, no, I need to get rid of it, because you're just angry about all of it, or you're hurt about all of it, or you're sad about all of it, whatever your emotion is. So don't go doing the editing that they tell you to yet, because I think also too, when you're emotional, you may not fully understand or comprehend exactly what your editor is telling you, right? You might be reading it differently, because we can't put like subtext into things that we get, like, you know, text or, you know, nothing that's verbal, right? So you might be reading it one way, and when you walk back, you might read it again and go, oh, that's what they're saying. I get it now. So.
Yes, especially if you're having one of those days and this feels like the straw on the camel's back, because your mindset when you first receive this feedback, it's going to be different when you've calmed down, when you've eaten, when you've slept, those kinds of things. You're going to be a different person taking in the criticism. Also, right. I just want to volunteer to be this person that I'm about to describe, just in the way that you should be really careful who you show your first draft to. You should be really careful who you vent to in a moment like this. You should particularly not vent to just some other writer who you barely know. You don't want to risk tarnishing the reputation of your editor. If you need to vent, make sure it's somebody like your guinea pig or your dog or somebody else who is like a dear friend and close to you, who can understand that you're just erupting right now, and then things will feel better another time. And I'm volunteering to be that person for anybody, because I understand how it is and how it feels. So if you don't have that person, just find me and DM me, and I will listen, and I promise I won't hate your editor after, and I will just be that sounding board for you. But just be careful who you vent to.
Yeah, we hope you don't hate your editor at all, because you need to understand that the criticism that they're giving you of your work is not a criticism or their opinion of you,
right,
or your abilities to write. It is just giving you feedback on the piece of writing that you handed them. So even if it comes back all marked up, it doesn't mean that they think poorly of you. And it doesn't mean that they think poorly of your ability to write either. It's just that this, what you sent to them, needs some work. And also, please don't take criticism as a sign to give up. I see that so often. I think we've had listeners of this show that have been very active, and then we know they finished a manuscript and we know they've sent it off somewhere, and then we don't hear from them again. So please, please, please don't use this emotional response as an excuse or as a sign that you're supposed to give up writing.
Yeah.
I love that.
But do take it as a sign that you need to improve, because we all do, as an opportunity to improve. Because isn't that the motive of your editor? Your editor's purpose and their motive for what they're doing for you is to improve your writing, not to show how much smarter they are than you or that they're a better writer. It is to improve your writing. So take it for that.
Well, if you are in a place where you're venting and, you know, and then you've calmed down and you've taken into advice, just like you said, well, they were just trying to make my work better. And you still are not sure that the critique is necessarily valid or kind of whatever. Would you say that you should probably try to get some clarity from that editor on the feedback so that you understand better what they're saying, perhaps?
Yeah, I would say that once you calm down, then with you in your calm state, go back and reread everything that your editor sent you so that you can look at it with fresh eyes. And then once you've done that, then you can send your questions to your editor. And we recommend that you do that in writing, mostly so that you have a paper trail of what you asked and what they responded.
Yep.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to ask all the questions. Like, you aren't a nuisance. You're a client. Mm-hmm. And if you're asking too many questions or the same questions over and over again, then they'll let you know that. But we don't want you to enter into this thinking that you can't ask for clarifying questions. But again, every relationship between editor and writer is different. So these are things that you need to discuss with your editor up front before you even hire them. Like, how much access will you have to them afterwards for clarification and like that. But you shouldn't be afraid to ask those questions.
Now, again, we don't want anybody to hear, well, maybe your editor just doesn't like you or something and run with that and think that their work is just picture perfect and their editor is full of baloney. But what if you sincerely do need to evaluate the validity of this critique? And I would then just refer people back to 247, episode 247 that we did last week, where we talk at length about how you would know if this critique has validity or if there may be something else going on there. But for the most part, we want you to hear that you probably do need to make these changes that are being advised to you. And if it feels hurtful to hear that, you just have to cope, go back to steps one and two that we were talking about earlier.
Agreed.
So you know that your editor is probably right and you have some changes to make. So it's time to revisit your piece, right?
Yes.
And I suppose go ahead, Jen.
I was going to say, Tina was talking about growth mindset. She said those who hold a growth mindset believe that they can get better at something, right? So Tina, can you talk about growth mindset a little bit?
Okay, I first heard about this from my daughter, who was getting a degree working with children. And so when they work with children, they always try to have a growth mindset and to teach the children a growth mindset. And I had a graphic. I don't know. With all our tech issues this morning, I don't know if that got uploaded. But those who hold a growth mindset believe that they can improve. And if they dedicate the time, effort, and energy it takes, that they can work on their problems and their flaws and overcome it and get where they want to be. And the focus is not on the outcome, but on the process of getting there. And so if you, and of course, I can't see it because my eyes. Does one of you guys want to read what it says on the graphic?
So read growth mindset is freedom, and it means finds inspiration in others' success. Effort is required to build new skills. Perseverance in the face of failures, accepts criticism, desires to learn, and builds abilities. We got this from Big Life Journal. Do you want me to read the fixed mindset as well?
You could, yeah, that could, because that'll give us a contrast between the two mindset.
All right. So if you have a fixed mindset, meaning that you avoid challenges, you ignore the feedback, you're threatened by others' success, desires to look smart, gives up easily, and has fixed abilities.
Wow. Yeah. It's like you can think of examples of these people if you inventory your own community. You know?
Right.
And I think most importantly, underneath growth mindset, it says is freedom. And under fixed mindset is limiting. And I would believe that we would all prefer to be free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
And so it really is this mindset that no matter what, how I've messed up, failure is an opportunity for learning and improvement. And we just need to put in the time, the effort, and the work that it takes to get past that and believe that we can improve and just keep going and not give up.
Right. And working on your flaws, working on one's flaws and the process, not the outcome, are the most important components of this, right? Did you say that already, Tina? Sorry.
Yeah, because the first criticism I ever got was from Rhonda's mother, Barbara, who told me that my prologue was full of passive voice. And we talked about this last week. So instead of throwing the thing in the air and saying, forget it, I give up, I went and I'm a number one learner. I started researching what in the world is passive voice because I didn't understand it. And it was kind of like when my dad was teaching me to drive a stick shift, I kept popping the clutch until he showed me a transmission taken apart and showed me how the gears fit together. And once I realized that those gears have to come together when you have your foot on the clutch, that's the purpose of it, I never popped the clutch again. Once I had that picture in my head that that's what I was doing. So I had to go get that picture in my head of what passive voice was. And I had to learn what it was so that I could prevent myself from using it. And I, and it was a process, and I kept working at it, and I kept trying, and eventually it became more natural not to think in passive voice and not to write in passive voice. And so that's kind of the example that I would give you of having a growth mindset.
Yeah, right, I love that. Go ahead, Jen.
Because editing, just like writing, is, like you said, it's something that you have to learn to get better at, right?
It's a skill.
And taking criticism. And taking criticism is a skill. Yep.
And if and you think...
Sorry.
That's okay. It's the criticism is an opportunity to grow. And when you look at it that way, instead of it feeling like an attack or something, it's almost like you can transmute that energy into something that helps you and is helpful to you. And you can start to be thankful to get that feedback because you're so happy that now you'll have a chance to grow.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you improve is like by doing things again and again and again. And if somebody didn't tell me that I was writing in passive voice and I just kept writing and writing and writing, I couldn't improve that because I didn't know it was a problem.
And right. I think that your story also helps support our final thought is that seeking support from writing communities and mentors will help you also to be able to get through the editor criticism, right? Because Barbara was part of our writing community. She was part of our writing group back then. And so, and we talked about this in our most recent live Q&A. And I did notice that Sonia said in here, she popped in and said, thank you ladies for the Patreon meeting. Such great advice. You made my week. We're so happy to hear that, Sonia. But we talked about this in that live Q&A for Patreon patrons, that you can always get a second opinion from other writers, mentors, or even beta readers. So if the edits you receive seem way out in left field, like get a second opinion before tossing your manuscript, get a second opinion before even making some of these edits that you feel like shouldn't be made. You know, we talked earlier about like trusting your editor and knowing that they want to improve your writing, but it doesn't mean that every single edit they suggest is the right one. So you need to like listen to them and put a lot of weight in that. But then you also need to like, you know, use some other resources too.
Right.
Well, go ahead, Jen. What?
I was just going to say in closing, like your editor wants your book to be a success as much as you want it to be, but it just takes a lot of work. This is not an easy train. Being a writer, if you haven't figured that out from being listening to this podcast, it's a lot of work to be an author. It's a lot of work to do the editing, every stage of it. So keep all that mind when you're trying to cope with the editor criticism.
Thanks, Jen. I appreciate that final thought because it wraps up the topic perfectly. And so it gives us the opportunity to move on to the feeding of the backs. This is where we offer feedback on our writing sprints. These writing sprints are done just before we go live, sometimes literally seconds before we go live. We are finished creating these sprints. We have a topic every week, and usually it's a grouping of five words. Sometimes it's a theme, sometimes it's a quote. And we encourage you to set a timer and write for 15 minutes and see what comes out. It's a great way to strengthen your writing muscle. It's a great way to sometimes get unstuck if you're having a little bit of writer's block. And it's just great fun in general. And so when I host, I always like to pick on Jen to go first and to tell everybody what did she write and what our prompt was.
All right. So our prompt today was five words: clash, unaware, paper, improvement, and inhibition. And I used three of the five. And it's not finished, but... My dad grabbed the cardigan off the back of the chair and went to put it on, unaware that it would clash with the threadbare Detroit Pistons t-shirt he was wearing. Please, Dad, don't you have anything else you can wear besides Chip's hand-me-downs? Chip, my brother, had discarded the said cardigan more than 20 years ago, sometime after he wore it in his senior pictures. He graduated in 1990. "What's wrong with this?" he asked, holding up the turquoise and black sweater, sporting faux leather elbow pads. "Chess King went out of business for a reason, Dad." My dad shrugged. "I have my flannel jacket." "That isn't an improvement." I sighed. "Really, don't you think it's time we went shopping for some new clothes?" Hard to believe he was voted best dressed of his senior class. I look over at my mother and laugh at her joke. The idea of my father being voted best dressed was a hilarious thought. But the problem was, my mother wasn't laughing. "You're joking, right?" Mom shook her head. "No, I'm not. Go check his yearbook." If the joke that my father was best dressed was funny to me, the actual truth became hysterical. I became laughing so hard I cried. "What happened, Dad?" "Nothing happened," he argued. "I'm the same fashion icon now that I was then." I looked at my mother for help. "Seriously, Mom, how did this guy get voted best dressed?" Mom shrugged. "He had older sisters." The aha moment. Now it all made sense. My dad was the youngest of 10 children. Most of the boys of the family came first, followed by the girls, then my dad. Most of his siblings were working by the time he would have been in high school. "So, Dad, you're telling me that your sisters bought all of your clothes and you didn't care?" He shrugged. "I didn't care what I wore, and they liked doing it, so who was I to argue?" Most of my dad's sisters were gone. 3, 2, 1.
Is that true?
It is true.
Oh,
I mean, it wasn't exactly like this, yeah. But yes, my dad still has a bunch of my brother's Chess King sweaters, and he wears them as if they're still in style. And he was voted best dressed, and you've met him. He's not best dressed, but he was voted it, and all of his sisters used to buy his clothes, and like literally, like he was like their doll growing up. Like there was like a bunch of girls, and then him as the baby. So.
I love that. And I really like this historical fiction for you specifically, because I feel like you're the keeper of all of these great stories in your family. And if you could ever just rattle them off without worrying about editing them or anything, what a treasure for your children someday to look at. Because, wow, that's really special. I really appreciate you sharing that.
Thanks.
I was so sure you were going to say that he was still dressing like it was 1990. And that's why he was out of style. But I was wrong. Because well, I know
basically,
people like that.
Yeah.
Like they,
I mean, basically,
they were
he
cool
does. Yeah.
In the 80s in high school, but they still dress like they're in high school in the 80s.
What I love is
my
dad
was in high school in the 60s, though. That's what it was. If he was still wearing 60 clothes, it might make more sense, but he's wearing my brother's hand-me-downs, which is ridiculous.
I mean, it's like a man who gives zero craps about what he wears is best dressed. And why? Because it's like, okay, I'll wear this then if they say I should. Do you know what I mean? Like, what a character.
This is the same guy that my mom, like 20 minutes before the wedding was supposed to start, looked out the window, and my dad and all the groomsmen are outside in t-shirts playing basketball in the hot weather and getting all sweaty and whatnot. Like, cause he's like, we got 20 minutes. Like he just doesn't think about that kind of stuff. And then my grandmother, his mother, saw what was going on, and she went out and took care of business with the boys.
Sometimes it takes a grandma.
So great. But what's really fun is you guys could have a lot of fun with this guy. Like if you and your daughters cahooted to just change out every piece of his wardrobe to whatever you want, he would wear it.
Probably.
Yeah, it's great.
Before I got married, that's what I'd buy him. I'd buy him clothes. Like I became like one of his sisters. Right. Yeah. So
cute.
So yeah, like this, you start sprinting and you just don't know where it's going to go. And like you just start writing. And then I got about a paragraph in and I was committed. I had to keep going, but I had to pretend that my mom was still here and that my brother was still here. And it's like, and then reading it was worse. Like, as I was reading it, I'm just like, just don't think about it. Don't think about it. So yes, I do want to write these things. I just don't know that I can. Right now,
I know. My goodness, that's why I really want to appreciate and thank you for sharing. It's very vulnerable.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, there was at a retreat I went on recently that told me I should write my story, and I kind of laughed and said, "Well, I need therapy first." Yeah. And I really wasn't joking. But I said it like it was a joke. Because it's hard when you bring up those old things.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, Jamie, what did you write?
All right. I wrote something super short this time. The boy's voice erupted as a whoosh of air as he forced the paper creations together. First, it was the archer making unfortunate contact with the horse-drawn cart full of imaginary club-brandishing infantry. He'd only started with 2 8.5 by 11s, after all, who spilled out from the back to clash with the unsuspecting dragoons who'd been watching the battle play out before them and who were knocked off their horses with their swords still sheathed. His mother looked on from the kitchen island where she was assembling the hamburger helper, a sad smile on her face. She knew her little boy was an imaginative, creative, wonderful one. She did not know how any of this translated into any sort of career capable of covering a mortgage, much less providing for a wife and children. But she also knew that her young son knew nothing of these concerns. He was blissfully unaware of concepts such as bills and wrestled to understand the meaning of the word deadline. She hated being a part of the system that she knew would bit by bit squash the imagination and creativity on full display at her kitchen table. She wished there was a part she could play in doing the opposite. But if she were to encourage him in his fanciful ways, who would be there to ensure he did not end up like his father, forever speculating, forever forecasting, forever making excuses as to why none of his grandiose plans ever came to fruition? As if her thoughts had summoned him, her ex pushed through the back door. Just in time for dinner, she mused with a wry smile, considering for just one moment not shrinking her portion in order to make accommodation for their only tenuously expected guest. But her boy jumped up with a shriek of delight and wrapped his arms around his father. So she sighed and split the portion between two plates. She set them down before the men in her life, then went into the bathroom to hide her weeping.
Oh, Jamie. The weight that this woman carries is like, in just those few words, like real, and we feel it. And to be looking at a little boy playing, most moms would be like, oh, isn't he cute? And this mom is already worried about how she's going to raise him in a way that he doesn't end up like his father, you know? So, and doesn't want to squash his like creativity, but kind of feels like she has to. Just really well written, really thought out. Well, thank you. That was really good.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a really good look into the heart of a mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all kind of look at our children and think, I need to, you know, steer them in the right direction, but also I don't want to stifle them.
Right.
And it's kind of a balancing act, even no matter if your child's a creative or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I find it's especially difficult when you feel like you have to play both roles because you feel like you don't have a partner and you don't have somebody else to do what you wish you didn't have to do because you feel like you shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Right. Right. But I think more women have that situation than what the world even knows. Mm-hmm. Because on the surface, probably in this woman's life, on the outside, everyone thinks everything's probably hunky dory.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah. So I appreciate that you all like that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And what did you come up with these words, Bambina?
Well, I'm going to lighten up the mood a little bit.
Yay!
I saw these words and I saw a woman badly dressed. That's what I saw. So,
all right.
And I wrote in my mystery, so. Which is probably good. Not going to go in the book.
Because it's too lighthearted.
Well, you'll find out.
Okay.
Detective Reeves was pretty sure that the woman sitting in front of his desk was unaware of the clash between the red-black lumberjack flannel shirt she was wearing and the blue-and-white pinstripe pajama pants. Not to mention the brown faux fur coat with her extra-tough boots. There were old-fashioned rollers in her hair with a hair cap over them. He wondered if she had one of those mental disorders that caused you to lose all inhibition as she lifted herself halfway off the chair and passed gas.
Oh, my gosh.
Detective Reed began to think the only thing that could be an improvement on this day is if somebody would come in and put him out of his misery. Just as he finished the thought, the woman reached into her Mary Poppins handbag and pulled out a Glock. The barrel was pointed right at him and instinct took over. He hit the floor. Only then, noticing the pièce de résistance, I can't pronounce that, of the woman's outfit, Eeyore slippers. Oh, I'm not going to shoot you, she said. I came here to give this to you. Detective Reeves sheepishly stood and situated himself back in his seat. She'd set the gun on his desk and was pulling a cigarette out of her purse. It appeared to have been lit and put out before, and the smell was actually an improvement over the general odor wafting from her direction.
Oh, gosh.
Why are you bringing me this weapon, ma'am? Found it in the trash bin when I took out the trash this morning. Just sitting there on top of the full garbage bags. I see. And when was the last time you put garbage in the trash bin? 2 days ago. I always take the trash out every other day. I just use the small white kitchen bags, but even so, it's just with just me. It takes me 2 days to fill one up. All right. Well, ma'am, I wish you would have left it where it was and called us. We'll need to process the area. Couldn't, she said, pulling a Zippo from her purse and flicking it. You can't smoke in here, ma'am, said Detective Reeves. The woman scowled, threw her Zippo back in her purse and stood. Anyway, the garbage truck was just down the street, and it was either get that thing out of there or let them take it. It's your problem now. She headed toward the door. Wait, I need to get your name and other information, he called, but she was already halfway down the hall, her Eeyore slippers shuffling along the linoleum floor.
I love it. I think you should find a way to put it in. You had me at lifted up. Herself up and farted. Like, it totally tells me who this person is.
I just want there to be like this. What I like is that you're funny without being like, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain
like
it.
Like goofy or corny. Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's very
like it's still good
smart
fit.
Humor. Yeah.
Yes. I feel like it could still fit in the book. I understand if you don't put it in there, but yeah, I agree with that, Jamie.
I'm going to have to leave out the farting and the Eeyore slippers.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know.
So talk about the Eeyore slippers.
Goofy to me.
And don't take this as criticism. And I would have to reread it myself. But I really want to like talk about this just to encourage our listeners. Because I think some people listen to us and think, oh, well, look, at they do. They write all the time. And so their sprints are better than my sprint ever could be. You mentioned earlier that she had boots on. And then all of a sudden you said extra tough.
She sure did.
Yeah. And then now she has unslip. And my whole point is that's what sprints are. You just get the stuff out there. And then when you go back and edit it or you use it, then that's when you work your through. So take pressure off yourself, listeners, and just try sprinting. It'll make a huge difference in your writing. So.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because Tina was saying, well, I'll have to get rid of the Eeyore slippers, and nice surprise for her when she would go back to edit. Oh, good. I gave an option to myself. So there it is. She's wearing extra tough boots because they can clunk down the hallway. And also, Tina, I don't think it's too goofy at all, because I feel like this detective really does see the comedy in life. And if you wanted to explore a theme with him, you could look at absurdism as far as a philosophy. And it's perhaps that he is dabbling with absurdism to try to reconcile the horrors that he has seen with the fact that, like, well, you only get one life and soon it will be over. And so it could be humor used in the most profound way, which I think you would like that, because I think your personality is very much like there is still something funny to be found in all of the darkness that sin is in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Because I love it when you get funny in the books. So just want to encourage that as a selfish reader.
I think it can help balance out the heaviness of what this book could be, you know, and the darkness that, you know, so just a thought.
Love it.
And I
love
think
it.
That, you know, our 10 years in the inner city, my husband being a pastor in the inner city, and you see the absolute horrors that people are going through that you can't, like, you try to help people, but like their own decisions curse them to continue the pattern over and over again. And sometimes you just have to see the humor in it all just to survive. Have to help those kind of people.
That's really interesting. Personally, I want to encourage this line of thinking as you write this book. So it can be this book that I would just love to read with that dark humor in it. So thanks for sharing, everybody. And if you take a crack at this sprint, set your timer to 15 minutes and write. We'd love to see it in our Facebook group. The Facebook group is open to anybody willing to answer the questions. And we would love to have you there. But if you want even more engagement with the hosts, you can join our Patreon. We have some very low cost tiers, and we would love to have you be a part of that community as well. So please look into joining our Patreon. So with that, we'll turn into the what's next. This is to find out what to expect from us in the upcoming week. Tina, what's next for you?
Well, it's spring break here in Michigan with our half a foot of snow that we're getting. And I have arranged to get my granddaughter for the week, and we have some fun little activities planned for her. We're going to take her to the library on Monday, and we're going to go to the Children's Museum, and we're going to, not all on Monday, we're going to spread it out. And I also want to take her to the planetarium. They have some pretty cool shows at the planetarium.
I love the planetarium up there.
I have never been to the planetarium.
Ooh, nice treat.
Yeah.
She can maybe taking your girls.
I'm wondering, because I'll just slide into my what's next really quick. Is very similar to Tina's. It's spring break next week. And so I have low expectations of me getting anything done because all my kids will have nothing to do, which means it's time for us to do things together. So
love it.
You know, so I think the planetarium is going to be on our list now because I've never done it and it sounds great. So
we should so meet cool. up
and do it at the same time.
We should.
It's like surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you get your daughter's friend to come with her daughter, who's friends with my daughters. So we'll have
it could be a party, a field trip. It could be a whole maybe you guys, thing. You could maybe get a field trip rate if you give them a call.
Good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe Jamie can hop on a plane and come up, go to the planetarium with us.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay.
What's happening for you, Jamie?
I don't know. I'm going to be weeping on Friday because not just because Jesus is in the tomb, but because we will not have any podcasts. It is Good Friday on the 29th, so we will not be podcasting. Hope that you have a blessed Easter weekend and Good Friday celebration to all of you. Between now and then, I feel like I always am lame as far as the what's next because I'm really trying to not pressure myself to do like the writing stuff. And my life then therefore pretty much kind of always remains the same. I guess I'll be trying to look out for hawks. I work a double both days at the restaurant this weekend. I hope I survive. It's been a long time since I did one double shift, much less two. But like, I guess for some reason, everybody asks for the weekend off. I don't know why. I do have a friend who's going to be in the miracle worker, but that doesn't open until next week. So I'm not really sure what's going on. Anyway.
Oh, I wonder if spring break there too.
No, spring break already happened here. Our kids get out in like May.
Oh.
So yeah, we had our spring break 2 weeks ago, I think. Bizarro town. But it's also not 6 feet of snow out there. I won't talk about the Florida weather today.
Yeah, please don't.
Out of respect.
Unless you want us to shoot daggers at you through the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you had it backwards. I think you all should be flying down here, but I digress. Flights
Do
are
you cheap. Have a planetarium?
Okay. No, we don't. Your planetarium is really great. I've got to say, like, it's super impressive. And they did upgrades to it. Right before I came down. So
anyway, really?
Yeah, awesome. It's nice. You'll love it. Okay, so I think that wraps up this episode of the Christian Indie Writers Podcast.
I think we didn't get Did we get Jen's what's next?
We did. I slid into it after yours. So
yeah, oh, she said yeah, ditto.
The host is usually in the middle. So I'm confused. I know. Just ignore
me. I don't do it right. Well, that concludes this episode of the Christianity Writers Podcast. So until next week, may your pen be prolific, may your deadlines be met, and may all of your words honor Christ. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.